Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Alaska State Troopers are investigating two cases of possible abduction and sexual assault in Fairbanks. Fairbanks State Trooper Detachment Commander Captain Eric Spitzer shared cursory information about the cases yesterday, which came to the public's attention through Facebook posts. Captain Spitzer says both involve Alaska Native women found along Chena Hot Springs Road in recent weeks. He says the first case was reported as a sexual assault Sunday, June 13th.
Victim was able to provide some information. However, she did not have any recollection of the events that transpired. She just found herself out in a remote area, and it took her a better part of a day to get back to the Chena Hot Springs Road.
According to a Facebook post by the alleged victim, she got drunk and was picked up by a man she did not know and taken out to mile 28 Chena Hot Springs Road, where she woke up in the woods. Citing the active status of the investigation, Captain Spitzer would not share additional case details.
At this point, we have had conducted exams and interviews, and it's still under investigation.
The other case occurred early this past Saturday morning. Two Rivers resident Amanda Brooks says she and her boyfriend were driving near mile 4 Chena Hot Springs Road around 1 a.m., when they saw a young woman hunched over in the roadside ditch.
And so we pulled over and we walked up to her, and she was kind of huddled on the ground with her knees against her chest and a flannel shirt wrapped around her. And she had her hair flipped over her face, and she actually kept her hair like that the entire time, so we never saw her face.
Brooks says there was a bottle of vodka nearby. She says the teenage girl did not say what happened to her, but did not appear to be injured. Brooks says they flagged down a passing ambulance for help, and the EMTs called troopers.
She agreed that she would go with the ambulance, and when she stood up, that's when we realized that she was completely naked underneath her flannel.
Brooks posted about the incident on Facebook and says she was contacted by someone in another area community who identified the girl as a runaway. The trooper Spitzer says the girl did not file a report.
Refused to cooperate with law enforcement or EMS and provide any information or answer any questions.
Spitzer says there's so far no evidence that the two cases are related.
I would tell you, if we had evidence of some type of serial rapist or someone abducting anyone, if we had any evidence like that.
Captain Spitzer says the cases are especially concerning given the epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women.
It's a big thing. We're aggressively pursuing this.
Spitzer advises people to be vigilant, adding that troopers have increased patrols in the area in light of the two cases, as well as recent arson fires in the Chena Hot Springs Road, Two Rivers Pleasant Valley community. The Army Corps of Engineers has completed environmental studies required for the decommissioning and dismantling of a mothballed nuclear power plant at Fort Greely. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The Corps of Engineers issued two documents this week on its plan to decommission and dismantle the SM-1A, an experimental Cold War-era nuclear power plant on Fort Greely that was shut down in 1972 and mothballed. The final environmental assessment and finding of no significant impact are required by the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA.
So we're in a formal 30-day wait period, after which point the NEPA process for the project will conclude.
Project manager Brenda Barber says during those 30 days, the Corps plans to complete work on an historic preservation agreement and apply for a decommissioning permit. And she says while that's in progress, the Corps hopes to move ahead on a smaller project that must be completed before the decommissioning and dismantling can begin, and that is disconnecting the old nuclear components from the now diesel-fired plant that provides heat and power for Fort Greely.
We are taking some initial steps to separate the utilities between the north and the south end of Building 606, which is the building that houses the SM-1A reactor.
Barber says the Corps is negotiating with Doyon Utilities, the contractor that operates the power plant, to administer the utilities disconnection project, which the Corps hopes to begin soon.
Should start as early as late summer this year, and it will clear the way for our decommissioning project in FY22 and 23.
Barber says the core team working on the SM-1A project also is preparing to begin soliciting offers from contractors interested in bidding on the decommissioning and dismantling project.
I anticipate we'll be releasing a request for proposal in the late summer.
The Corps hopes to complete the decommissioning and dismantling of the old SM-1A within the next 7 years. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Yukon River Chinook and Summer Chum Salmon are both coming in near or below the lower end of the preseason forecast, and fishing is shut down. Speaking during a weekly teleconference yesterday, Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission Chair Brooke Woods shared a sobering Chinook count number.
As of Monday, June 28th, just over 60,000 king have been counted at the pilot sonar station, and that is only half the average count for the state.
Woods says it's estimated that about half the Chinook run has entered the river, and if things don't change, a Chinook border passage agreement with Canada, as well as drainage-wide escapement, are not expected to be met.
This will be the third year in a row, and that in itself is very concerning.
The situation is even worse for summer chum salmon. State research biologist Fred West said the run is trailing far behind the historic average at this point, with 31,000 estimated past the pilot station sonar as of Monday, well below the historic median of 500,000.
The lowest on record for this date. So, so this is lower than the runs we saw in 2000 and 2001.
This year is a tough year.
Dina Jallin is the state's summer season management biologist.
If there were fish to be harvested, I would, you know, be wanting to let people harvest, but there's just no fish to be harvested.
King and summer chum salmon fishing are closed from the Yukon River's headwaters in Canada to the river's mouth in Alaska, as well as area coastal communities beyond. Hooper Bay resident John Rivers lamented the situation.
I never see Hooper Bay closed. Ever since I was a little boy, to this day, I see, and it's so sad to say it's closed. I know that's out there.
Right now, we are in panic mode.
Martin Kelly of Pilot Station said communities need help filling the food void.
Hopefully, the state, Fish and Game, and everybody else better be prepared to go out and get some crab or pollock or halibut and bring it to each household on the Yukon River.
Application for a federal disaster declaration is already in the works, according to Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission Director for the Tanana Chiefs Conference, Stephanie Quinn Davidson.
But just so folks know, that disaster declaration process takes a long time. We don't anticipate that funding would be available to fishermen for at least a year, maybe possibly 2 years.
Quinn Davidson said that a request submitted for a disaster declaration for last summer's poor Yukon River salmon runs was just recently forwarded by the state to the federal government. It's gotten harder for Alaska patients to get telehealth appointments with doctors outside the state. That's because pandemic-era licensing waivers have gone away with the governor's emergency order. KTOO's Claire Strempel reports.
Doctors are usually required by the state to have a license to provide telehealth services to a patient located in Alaska. But when COVID-19 hit, the legislature passed a bill that waived that requirement. Now it's over. Jared Kosin heads the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. He says this is back to normal, but the pandemic revealed that normal needs work.
Can we take some of those flexibilities and the ones that make sense and reform telehealth in Alaska to incorporate them?
He says the big concern is how to keep the service without sacrificing accountability. Getting an Alaska license takes time and paperwork, and it costs over $800 to get an initial 2-year license. The time, effort, and cost doesn't always pencil out for outside doctors with just a few Alaska patients. So the state created emergency courtesy licenses to get lower 48 practitioners licensed and serving Alaskans more quickly. They're only valid for 6 months, but they're cheaper and faster. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel.
And I'm Dan Bross.